Okay, so the last talk will be about motion, because so far we have talked about creating shapes we imagine, but it was mostly static shapes. Then shapes that can be printed and put into motion with the last talk. But of course, with virtual motion, we can do much more. So how can we use these creative interfaces, such as sketch-based modeling and sculpting, for creating motion? And I will first come back to what Spike said this morning. So if you look at this animation here, this is where we have gone, the farther we have gone, if it works. Okay, used to work. Okay, it doesn't. Let's try. Okay, so let us look on the right here, and you. So it's finally 8 years ago, the farther we had gone with virtual clay. And when we manage, after years of research, to improve what Spike did in the early years, to have a virtual clay that was working in real time, we realized that to be able to sculpt something with this clay, we needed to have our own hands in the real world. At that time, I had Paul Cry working in my group as a postdoc, so he invited this nice device called the Hand Navigator to be able to drive people's hand in the virtual world. And after all this work, we realized that trying to inspire from the way we interact in the real world was not really a good idea, which was exactly the conclusion of Spike's talk. On the other hand, we were also been trying to get inspired by sketching and painting systems. So this is a system with sketch-based modeling, with painting, with implicit surfaces, a little bit similar to the one Joachim demonstrated. And with this system, which was much farther away with the way people interact in real, because here you infer 3D from a 2D sketch, then even kids within 15 minutes were able to do stuff. So this was only for metaphor, inspired from the physical world, for only static shapes. Now, when it comes to motion, if you want to inspire from physical media, you have not much to inspire from, because, of course, physical media is very limited to depict motion. You can try to sketch motions. There are two examples here. You can try to sculpt motion, which is even more limited. But here, there is really something new to invent. In fact, digital media is giving us the first opportunity to sketch and sculpt animated content, because it doesn't exist in real. So this is one of the stuff we wanted to explore in my group. Do these ideas of sketching and sculpting can really be extended to media, which is things that are moving, animated things, and it opens a number of new questions. Firstly, is sketching still the fastest way to create new content? You have seen today, in most of the talk, creating a new stuff was done by sketching rather than sculpting. Why? Because, as I show you in my own example, in fact, sketching proved much more, for static shape at least, sketching is much more efficient, practically, than trying to sculpt directly in 3D. So does the same apply to 3D motion design? Then, is sculpting still the best metaphor for editing and refining existing motion? And if we try to sculpt motion, should we work at constant time and then interpolate, or can we do more? For instance, can we sculpt while the animation is running? Can we sketch in space, but also in time? Or should we specify or edit the rhythm of a motion, independently from where it goes? So these are very interesting questions, and in this talk, I will just present briefly two of the projects from students I co-advise. The first one is sculpting animated content, the example of crowd sculpting. So this is a work from Kevin Jordao, who I co-advise with Julien Petré, who is here. And the second work is sketching in space and time for character animation, which is a work of Martin Gay, who I am co-advising with Rémi Ronfard. And then I'll try to extract a few challenges for the future and get to the general conclusion of this symposium. So sculpting, in fact, was recently extended to structured shapes. So this is an example we did with Antoine Millier, and which was presented a few years ago. And so it's a way of sculpting shapes that are defined by puzzle grammars. And the idea is simple, you want to edit such shapes as if they were clay by pushing, pulling, and what you want to do is that if you extend a wall, all the tiny detail will duplicate, the towers in a big wall will duplicate as well. And finally, it's like if you were sculpting like castle material, and castle material being defined by the grammar that you can extract from the shape. And so this is done, if you look at how it is done with mutable elastic models. This means that while you are manipulating the shape at the left, what you have is that the piece of the shape is automatically snapping to the closest piece. So if for instance, if the wall bends too much, then a corner will be inserted. If it stretches too much, a new piece will be inserted, and so forth. So our first work on sculpting motion was to generalize this to animated content. And we did it with a specific type of existing animated content. This is crowd animation. Crowd animation data is like a space-time puzzle if you model it with crowd patches. Crowd patches, depicted here with these little trajectories, are like little trajectories that you can put together. So I give you an example here. So this is an example of a patch. You have some static obstacles, and then you have a few, this is also a static obstacle, and then you have some in and out points here, and you have trajectories connecting these points. You need to have the same number of points in and out. And then you can have different characters. Look, the trajectories are the same, but it's a bunch of different characters that go into these trajectories. So this can be used like tile, like when we do texture-based tiling, but a tile that works in space and time. And so if you put together several of these crowd patches, you get something like this. So in fact, if I remove the border, you will not see where is the border between the crowd patches. And also the repetitivity of the trajectory, which is all periodic, is hidden, because the trajectories are, you have different characters that are running, working on these trajectories. So in fact, you don't see too much repetitivity when you don't display the trajectories. So the advantage of using crowd patches is that it enables you to create unbounded animation. Unbounded in space, because you can just put an arbitrary number of crowd patches together, and unbounded in time, because it's all periodic motion. So our first work for sculpting animation, first attempt, was to try to reuse the mutable elastic model I have demonstrated for the castle, but for this animated content. So the idea is to represent the connected crowd patches as well with the graph, and then extend mutable elastic model. So here is an example of the kind of result you get. So while you are extending these crowd patches, other patches or corners are inserted, depending on the motion you do. But here this is really animated content. The animation can be even running while you are doing the interaction. So this is a populated street, and you can as well copy, paste, and do as with clay, remove a little part, then put it with the rest, cut, and fully shape, for instance, an animated village with a number of streets. So this is just a direct extension, and you have this content which is correct. So where we get stuck is more for temporal editing. Of course, with these crowd patches, what we can do is superpose several interchangeable patches. Then you can switch between these patches which have the same border constraint, but only at start of period, so that motion remains continuous. What is very interesting is that when you switch between patches, trajectories are totally visually discontinuous, but since you only display them as one character walking along those trajectories, the motion of this specific character can be continuous even while the trajectories are discontinuous when you change the content. When you do that, what you manage to do is to edit the periodicity of motion. So this is the example. You have the first version of the central patch, and suddenly we switch to the second version of the central patch. I'll show it again. So if you look only at the little character, you would even not notice, and then you would just see that the periodicity of the central motion is different from the one on the two sides. So the result of this work is mostly that space sculpting works fine. It works like sculpting shapes. But time sculpting, at least with this crowd patches model, remains quite limited because motion cannot really be done to go faster or slower. This is because if you wanted the central patch, the people in the central patch go twice faster or twice slower, there would be a problem of your boundary constraints with the other patches. So you would need then to have change propagating over the other patches. And if you want in some parts that it goes faster, in other parts of the little city to go slower, then you would have density problems to be solved because some areas we need to be denser, other less dense, and this would need to be animated. So I think in this, so this is more to show the challenge. I think that there is a lot of to do for sculpting this kind of data, animated data, both in space and also in time. Another project I would like to talk about is how we create a new motion. So at the motion creating design stage, the current software we get for designing motion is currently only available to train artists. This is an example from Estelle Charleroi, who is a computer artist in our group. So here you see the kind of interface you get for animating, for instance, a flying dragon. The idea is how can we make a design of animation available not only to artists, but even to basic people. For these people, as I showed with the example of shapes created by children, similarly, we'd like children to be able to create motion in a very simple way. And here, we got inspired by the way artists depict motion. And a very important concept that was introduced by artists was a line of action. They have shown that for sketching expressive characters, it's very important that from the camera viewpoint, from the viewpoint where you sketch, you have this line that represents kind of the intent of the character and most often has an expressive C or S shape. And what is interesting also with this line is that it is a line, if I can show it. So you have alignment in position, but also mostly in orientation, as you see in the purple circle. So you see that the limb of the character has the same orientation as the line of action, but is not necessarily at the same place. So there is a kind of compromise between orientation, position and orientation. And so the first work we did in this context was to try to use this line of action so the user sketch a line of action and to use it for automatically posing a 3D character. The idea is to interpret the line of action as a projective constraint. So you pose the character from the viewpoint in which you want to see, to show your movie, your film, your animation. And then automatically the character will align, not necessarily everywhere in position, but at least in position and or orientation. So this was the first work Martin Gay did. But if you do that, we have only advanced a very little step in the context in making animation available to beginners. Because if you just take these 3D shapes and interpolate between them, you will not have the right timing. It will still be time-consuming to take this animation. The second step is to move to more expressive keyframing. And then a very nice idea is the idea that you should interpolate not the character model in 3D, but maybe first interpolating the line of action in 2D can be very useful and much more expressive. So this led us to the concept of dynamic lines of action. So this dynamic line of action, what is nice is that, for instance, here the user would sketch here three lines, so the lines which are at the beginning, at the top of the motion, and at the right of the motion, and the system will interpolate and get the other lines, and then for each of those lines, you adjust the position of the 3D character. This can be done easily by preserving local length and favoring rotation along the line. So our solution involves smooth interpolation of root position, angle, and segment length. Okay, so this is a second step. We can get more expressive keyframe animation, but this is still keyframe. In order to make them even more expressive, we can also try to use some physically based keyframing. So this is a work that is going to appear in SBIM. And in this physically based keyframing, we just interpret the line of action as a kind of spring. So if you have a single line of action in the top right corner, you can imagine like a spring releasing some elastic energy, and you can already infer what the rest of the motion would be. But if you have several, for instance here, a final position and the last position, what we did is a system where the line of action in 2D tried to be physically based animated and to shoot through the next line of action that was depicted by the user. So we can do that to add dynamics in sketches. Yet this is still the keyframing concept. If you do that, still the user has to design the animation by thinking, okay, at time one I'm like this, time two like this, and so on. We are not really using all the capabilities of a computer-aided system. So can we do better than keyframes to design motion? In fact, an important thought is that a dynamic line of action is in fact a 2D surface. It's a 2D manifold that is living in a 2D space, the space, because if you look at this red line moving, so it describes a surface over time. Of course, the surface can overlap, can self-intersect if this little character was going back and forth and forth. And so finally, this line of action that we were drawing using keyframing are only constant time slices of this surface. And for people who do here 3D modeling, you know that sketching slices is not always the best way to design a nice looking 3D surface. So the idea is that since we are designing a surface, can we do something else than just sketching constant time slices? Can we initialize a dynamic line of action in a single gesture? And can it enable us to control motion rhythm? Because this is what is completely lacking if you are doing this keyframing kind of approach. Motion rhythm is completely lacking from it. And so here again, we got inspired by the way artists are sketching motion. For instance, if they want to sketch a flying dragon, the body of the dragon is following a trajectory, then the artist would just sketch the trajectory, something that looks like the trajectory. But this blue trajectory on the top depicts at the same time the trajectory of the dragon and the shape the body should take over time. So it's much more than just the trajectory for the center of gravity of this dragon. So this is for flying motion. For bouncing motion, we found the sketch here at the middle, which is a mug which has been bouncing. And what is interesting is that you have this trajectory in blue, but if you look carefully at the shapes in red that the mug is taking over time, you can see that most of the red shapes it takes can be already extracted from the bouncing trajectory because it just aligns to the trajectory. The shape is going back and forth because of this the Disney, what we so-called Disney effect in computer animation. You have a follow-up, you have a... Of course, this and at the bottom, you see a motion for looping. So usually when people want to represent this gymnast doing a jumping and doing a loop, they will just do a loop motion. And this can be inspiring as well for the trajectory, but also for the shape of the body is taking over time. Using this kind of trajectories was already used by Mike van de Pan and his student Thorne in 2004 for motion doodle. But for motion doodle, they didn't design new motion. They only reuse motion data and try to fit the motion data to the user sketches. So can we create really new motion by initializing our dynamic line of action or 2D surface from these sketches? So we need to interpret now the user sketch has a space-time curve. It's sketching in space and time, not only sketching in space. And we will, this will enable us to take drawing speed into account and then to design the rhythm of motion at the same time as a trajectory and shapes. So let us start with a flying motion. So if I want to model a dragon flight, if I look at the top, this is the way a current system would react. If you just take the shape of the keyframe one of the dragon and the keyframe two of the dragon and interpolate point by point the head of the dragon and its tail, then the trajectory will not be at all what the user wants. So the user could instead give this trajectory for the center of gravity of the dragon and then try to accommodate, to design other shapes, but then he will need a kind of infinite number of keyframes to get exactly the right shape at exactly the right part of the trajectories. So really, this kind of fly motion is extremely difficult to achieve with keyframes. So now if we want to interpret the blue curve at the bottom as a space-time sketch, what do we need to do? So the line of action should obviously translate along the curve, and the drawing speed can give us a translation speed. So our solution is that we just animate a window along this curve, and using warping, an adequate warping function here, which defines a window in pink, which will move at a speed which can be extracted if we want from the sketch. The other benefits we can have by having this is that optionally we can have squash and stretch effects if we take into account the speed at which it was sketched, also for defining the geometry of the character along the curve. Then for the bouncing motion, we have this very easy bouncing gesture, and imagine yourself doing this bouncing gesture. You would naturally go slower when you go down, and then you go up again. So the timing of motion is really related to the way we sketch this kind of curve as well. So here, we take this blue curve, and we automatically set the lines of action keyframe we need in red here, and then they will be interpolated. They will be automatically set from the trajectory. So in one gesture, we have some shapes, and we have some temporal territory as well. And then we can kind of sculpt the resulting motion just by putting our cursor on one point along the curve and resketch the shape at this given point along the curve. So it's really a design system for motion where you can sculpt in the sense of I have something and I'm progressively editing it and from coarse to fine and refining it and editing again and again. So you can really improve little by little your motion. For the loop, it's just a little bit more intricate. You also have this blue trajectory. Then you have the red part, the red lines of action that need to be automatically initialized at the beginning and at the end of the motion. And we remark that what we want to have in the middle is like the flying motion. The shape of the object you are animating should follow the curve. But if you make it follow the curve, then the center of gravity will be much lower than the user is expecting. Look at the green curve on the right, on the top right. This is what you would, if the body of the little girl is following exactly the loop given by the red curve, then you will have this kind of effect for the trajectory. We want it a little bit higher. So we make the shape follow the loop, but then we add a correction which puts it a little bit higher. And so here is what it got, what it does. So first, this is an example of an artist-drawn animation, and then how people can do it again with our system. So this is a kind of motion which is very difficult to do with usual models. And now the user just drew a single space-time curve. And with this curve, you can have so this motion that we can, then after that, you can very easily refine it, what I call sculpting it. So you, in one gesture, you have your first draft of motion, and then you freely refine it. So So now we'll show that we can also add details to a motion. So we stop at any time of the curve, and we just edit the keyframe, and we can of course add secondary line of action from other viewpoints. And so just in 2 minutes, you have something difficult. So this is part of our user study. We were giving this example to people, and in this example, the dragon was just twisting along its axis. And so we provided CAN techniques so that the user can make the dragon twist along the trajectories. And this is a kind of result our users got using this. So we have maybe, I don't remember exactly, maybe 20 users. And the results compared to keyframing animation, even keyframing with line of action with the previous system we had, are really great. So to conclude this, I would like to talk about the next challenges in character animation. Of course, this was a very beginning of work, and I'm expecting a lot of other work following this to try to improve the way user can design motion using the metaphors such as sketching, sculpting, but maybe also many other different metaphors. For instance, Karen Singh had a very interesting work on walking motion using the fingers, and then you use your own fingers on a table, and then characters will. This is a way of using mimics or using gesture to animate 3D, to animate content. So, what I think are the main challenges is how can we sculpt or sketch interactions between characters? Because for the moment, it's only individual motion that we manage to sketch. How can we do it when several characters are interacting together? Now, when you want to edit group motion, would it be possible to use those technology from coarse to fine to have a kind of sketch-based system which is coarse to fine and maybe coarsely sketch for the group and then refine each individual motion? And then if you zoom on the face of the character, there is a very interesting work in our group on trying to use mimics to make expressive faces. So we want to transfer the intention of the people who controls to the character, but not the personality. If you have a given character which has a given personality, you can try to mimic for them what the expression they should have, but it's your intention that should be transferred, which is a difficult part. Another challenge is extending all this to natural phenomena. Imagine this cup here. If you make it fall in some water, of course, in the physical world, it will fall always differently. If you just do your washing and just drop your cup, it will never do the same. So there is a full space of plausible motion. So how could we enable a user to sculpt within all this free space of plausible motion, but staying in this space of plausible motion? Can sketching help for natural phenomena? I'm not totally sure. It would be very difficult. Maybe exploration from some first solution through kind of sculpting would be much more appropriate. There was already a very nice paper from Chris Vochan at SIGGRAPH last year when he interpolated between several physically based animation. This is a start. It was only for fluid animation, but maybe this can be extended and also make more interesting. This is also a solution we had in my group on the design of waterfalls. So the design of waterfalls, it works fine. The user can give a coarse sketch of what they want, and we solve for a waterfall. But this is only for a stationary motion, which is always the same in time. So can we do that for more general natural phenomena? And now I'm just coming to the conclusion of this whole day on expressive modeling. So we have seen a number of new advances towards creating and editing shapes and also motion. And I believe that what is really useful for people is to have a system that enables them to progressively refine these shapes and this motion using gesture, so that they can progressively get to what they want. So I'm not believing like Karen said that we have already the shape in our head and we just need a video out to show it to people. maybe he didn't, I'm a bit provocative here, but what I believe is that we create while we see something in front of us. So if you want to create a new stuff, maybe you need to start drawing. You cannot create entirely, I think, in your head without having this first visual feedback in front of you. So what I would like the computer system to be is giving you the best possible visual feedback in front of you so that you can design shapes, but design motion as well, and design them in any order. What I didn't precise for Martin Gay's work is that when you sculpt motion with a dynamic line of action, what is nice in interpolating motion for this line of action is that you can do it totally independently from the character which needs to be animated. So it's a first step towards being able to design motion even before the full character has been designed. And doing it in any... imagine you have a story in mind and you want to experiment with a story. In this story, you have characters, you have motion, and being able to draft this in a coarse way, then you see this visual feedback, and little by little, you will precise what exact motion you want, which exact character you want, how they should behave. And I think this coarse-to-fine way is the best way, at least from my experience, to be able to create new stuff. So, of course, the computer here is very helpful, and as Eric said, to get rid of complex and repetitive tasks for which the computations by the computer are much better than people. So replicating behavior, optimizing so that it exactly match and fit. And so I think that all our research at the end could maybe make human more creative because we'll have a better, much better than just a piece of paper and a pen to create something totally new with these new interfaces. And so I'm saying again what I said this morning, graphics design, but be seen as cognitive tools, enhancing and extending our brain. So it's a kind of augmented humans that we are doing by providing all these tools. But what I would like is to augment humans without instrumenting them as in the right. I don't think that we have the shape in our head and then you put like sensors and we directly create the 3D model. No, I don't want that. I agree with Imetani, what he said is that people love what they are doing when it takes time and they want to experiment with it. And it's like if you had a relationship with your creation. I think this is very important, keeping this in mind. And that's all. This concludes this symposium. Thank you.